Boy, do I have a doozy of a story for you today. Picture this. You're just minding your own business, trusting your cloud provider to keep your data safe and sound. That's when a massive fire rips through and destroys their entire data center, and suddenly your whole digital world is gone. That's exactly what happened in 2021 to the poor customers of OVH. And let me tell you, the more I dug into the story, the more I realized just how messed up it was. We're talking about a company that claimed to have top-notch backup practices, but in reality, they were about as reliable as a chocolate teapot. This is a wake-up call for anyone who's ever put their faith in the cloud. This episode will be a wild ride through the ups and downs of this whole fiasco. We'll talk about the shady decisions made by OVH Cloud, why the fire got so bad in the first place, why companies lost data, and the crucial lessons that every single one of us needs to learn from this mess. So whether you're an IT hotshot or just someone who wants to keep their data out of the fire, you better listen up. By the end of this episode, you'll know exactly what questions to ask your cloud provider to make sure you never end up in the same boat as those poor OVH customers. I'm W. Curtis Preston, aka Mr. Backup, and no one cares about your data more than I do. I want to turn you, the unappreciated backup admin, into a cyber recovery hero. This is the Backup Wrap-Up. Welcome to the show. I'm W. Curtis Preston, and I have with me my election worker, post-traumatic stress counselor, Prasanna Malyandi. How's it going?
I'm doing well, Curtis. How are you doing? Have you recovered? I know that you had a pretty hectic 10 days, of which 11, the last day was probably 11 days, of which the last day was probably like a lot more effort than the first 10 days. So
yeah, basically we got more voters on the actual election day. It was the primary. It was Super Tuesday, for those of you, which for those of you not in the US is a day when many states have their primaries for the presidential election, and California is one of those, which is where I live, and I happen to be an election worker. It's something that I do volunteer. Well, I volunteer to do it, but I do get paid for the time that I spend there. Not a ton, but I do get paid for my time. But you know what, Prasanna? I could very easily talk about this for an hour.
I think we've had three episodes.
You know what? I'll put in the show notes. If you're curious to know my thoughts on the way elections work and how they actually work versus the way you think they work, go check those. I'll put them in the show notes, and you can check
those. And we do have also the episode with Mark.
Yes, and we have the episode with Mark. Yeah, there's two ways that site managers run the sites. Mark is of the first type, which is the I'm here to help you vote. And if you have any questions other than that, like if you want to question the process, here's a phone number. I'm more of the type that will actually take the question. I remember one voter, I basically was grilled for probably 45 minutes by a voter.
Oh my God.
I feel that she went away with a little more confidence in the system. And what was really funny was the moment when I had two voters within 5 minutes of each other. One who said, and it was interesting, he's really, really old gentleman. Like I'm old. He was old to me. So he was old, right? And he basically said, this is crazy. With all this technology, we could just replace all this stupid paper with technology. And then another person 2 minutes later came up and said, there's way too much technology here. We should just do this with paper. And I was like, well, we are doing it with paper, but I don't have time to go into that. But anyway, so it is time to get into our topic of the week. This week, in our continued series on cloud disasters, where people thought that they had backups or think that they don't need backups, and then they found out otherwise. This one is a pretty big one, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. I think it was probably one of the most impactful ones, right? Just in terms of the customer.
Yeah, but most its most impactful. Customers were really messed up with this. And also, and in another way, it was not impactful at all. We're going to talk about that, in the story. We're talking about the OVH fire of 2021. So what's interesting is, we have primarily a North American audience. We have, plenty from other countries, but the bulk of our audience is in North America. And I'm willing to bet that prior to this fire, the average person in North America had never heard of OVH.
I'm
willing to bet.
Yeah,
me neither, right? And I'm willing to bet that the average person still doesn't know anything about OVH.
Yep.
That this story sort of came and went, and it's kind of amazing, and that's a little bit sad.
Yeah.
So you want to sort of tell the story of the fire?
Yeah. So in March, so I think before we get there, so a couple things. First, people should probably know a little bit. I know you talked about OVH isn't as popular.
Oh, that is right. Yep.
Right? But OVH is a cloud provider. They are the largest European headquartered cloud provider. So,
right. And they're headquartered in France.
Yeah. And one of the unique things is, at least for this data center, the way that they built it is they actually use shipping containers, right? So they're kind of stacked on top of each other. They have a bunch of servers in there with power and cooling and also wooden walls and framing inside as well, because it is a shipping container. I've actually watched a bunch of YouTube people who do a lot of container homes. And so, you need to add structure to containers in order to be able to do things like put floors and walls and other aspects. And cooling.
There's interesting relationship there because the videos to which you referred, they also lost data.
Yep. Yeah. So, the one that I watch.
Maybe we'll come back to that in a later date.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty big company.
Yeah.
Big enough that, we'll save the surprise. Yeah.
And they have a lot of customers and they're a lot of government contracts as well. So it's not like it's like a mom and pop cloud provider, right? It is a huge cloud provider.
Also, an important thing is that they offered a backup service.
Yes.
That you could pay extra for. It happened to be hosted Veeam, right?
Yep.
Veeam did nothing wrong here, but definitely the vendor did. They offered a hosted backup service. It's a little bit different than the average cloud backup problem where it's like, well, you expected your cloud vendor to back up and they didn't back up and you should have backed up. And so it's nobody's fault but your own. But in this case, there were customers that actually paid for the backup service.
Yep.
And then what happened?
So what ended up happening in March of 2021, there was a fire. And how they have it situated is there are basically four, I don't know if you'd call them data centers within that single site, but they had four data centers, if you will, within it. And they had a fire in one. And these are shipping containers. And apparently they did not have the right fire suppression equipment. They did not have electrical cutoff capabilities. And so firefighters came and they tried their best to put out that fire, but the thing just spread like crazy.
It was just, the craziest thing in the report that came out a year later, the Bass-Wrenn report, it said that it started at an electrical inverter on the first floor. But here's my favorite phrase. When the firefighters came, they were met with electric arcs of more than 1 meter around the exterior door of the energy room. Like, that sounds something out of like a Avengers movie. Like, this is you call in Superman.
Exactly.
Of 1 meter long. That's about a yard for those of you who live in the U.S., right? Electrical arcs that long. And then no suppression. It said it took them over 2 hours to get the fire or to get the electrical cut off because they had to do it somewhere else. They couldn't do it in the building.
And it wasn't just the one data center that got affected. It also impacted the other one. So I think one of the other ones had some damage, right? It wasn't major, right? Like the first one, but there was still quite a bit of damage. And then the other two, they had to bring it offline because, like you mentioned, they had to cut the electricity. They weren't sure what else was broken, right? So right. They basically brought everything down.
Yeah, it's like you look at the pictures of this. This was a giant fire, right? And initially, I felt that they responded well, and that they did what we suggest people do, is they created a status page.
Yep.
And they updated that status page. The CEO actually made a number of videos, mm-hmm. put them out. I'm not sure if he put them on YouTube or whatever, but he was trying to reassure people that we're doing everything we can to recover
yep.
from this, recover with a small r yep. there.
And they were transparent, yeah, right? Right? The other thing is they were like, hey, we have other data centers. They were quick trying to bring up new servers to move these customers over to that new equipment, right? To get them up and running as quickly as possible. So they were bringing up the infrastructure, but this is a big but, right? What about their data?
Yeah, so apparently the backup servers were literally, you know, in the same data center that they were backing up, and which, you know, is not in keeping with, you know, the 3-2-1 rule, right? So that's just a fundamental design flaw, yeah. I would say. If you're offering backup services, you should not be putting the backup servers directly next to the thing that they're backing up, yep. right? Now, they're saying that they were physically isolated, but they were just literally like over in the corner.
Yeah.
Like, go sit in the corner, your yeah. backups. Yeah.
Which is not what you were. And I don't know how many people actually understood that, right? If you were managing your own backup environment in your own data center, you could physically validate these things. When you are trusting and buying a service from a vendor, right, you just have to either ask the hard questions to really figure out what they're doing or just trust that they're doing the right thing. And that second part got a lot of customers burned. You like what I did there?
I like what you did there. So about a year later is when the fire department report came out, and that's when we learned that they had no fire suppression systems, they had no power cutoff systems. We learned that it damaged at least two other data centers, right? And because while they initially started out being very open, OVH suddenly stopped talking.
Yeah.
Roughly in May of 2021, they stopped talking, and they haven't spoken publicly about the incident since that. And that could be because they were planning for an event.
Yeah, it was a big event.
A big event. What event might they have been planning for, Brisana?
Yeah. So in October of 2021, which is 7 months after the fire, they went through an IPO and went public and raised a bunch of money. Right. It wasn't a failure of an IPO either. Like, I think the stock actually went up. They raised a good deal of money. Right. So it was a pretty successful IPO 7 months after this incident.
And that just flabbergasts me, right? Like, as someone who worked at a pre-IPO company, right? I can't imagine something that catastrophic happening and then 7 months later saying, you know what we should do? We should have people invest in us.
Well, one thing is the IPO was probably already planned in the works, right? Started going. And
yeah.
they were hoping that, yeah.
They didn't want to press pause.
You got to strike while the iron's hot. Because remember,
the iron was pretty hot.
Right? So I think that they just took the chance, rolled the dice, and figured, yeah, we're a large public cloud provider in Europe that we have sort of a dominant position here. We might as well raise the money while we can. I don't know how things ended up there. And I think it's not like they've gone by the wayside, right? OVH is still popular in Europe. There are still a lot of people using their services, right? So It's not like they just crumbled up and died.
Well, I would like to point out that they went out at 20 euros, right? Mm-hmm. Back in October of 2022. Their current value is half that.
Okay.
So basically, they went up a little bit. They had a little bit of a spike for about 2 months, and then it has done nothing but go down ever since. It may not have been a failure in the beginning, but it certainly doesn't look very good now. It's worth less than half, which gives me a little bit of consolation, I guess. Maybe it's that as the news continued to come out over the years, right? And there was other news as well. Immediately after this happened, we started hearing about a class action lawsuit, right? And there was a firm, Ziegler and Associates, that filed a class action lawsuit in September of 2021, which, for the record, would have been a month before the IPO. And they fired it, you know, for clients that had lost data to the fire or due to the fire. And as of basically about a year ago, it said there were 140 customers in the lawsuit.
And the lawsuit is still ongoing?
Yeah, it appears that it's ongoing. We don't have any information on, at least I don't have any information that it ended. I didn't see any stories that it ended. But we do have a story about two customers that were apparently not in that class action lawsuit. What did you hear about those?
Yeah, so there were two customers. The first basically had sued them because they had signed up for the automated service. And based on the contract wording, the judge sided with them, saying that, yes, physically isolated means that you keep them separate, and having it in the same building goes against like what's expected, what you would do for like a backup perspective, and is wrong. And so they basically won a nominal amount, I would say. They did not. I think they were suing for like 3 million euros. They got like 100,000 euros. So it was a nominal win, but it still showed that, yeah.
Yeah, and a couple things there. While I agree with the – sometimes you have the spirit of the contract or the letter of the contract – I agree with what the judge says, obviously.
Yeah.
Who does that, right? Yeah. Who does a backup design where the backup systems are in the same data center as the primary systems? Having said that, that was stated in the contract. And that was the most shocking part to me, is that, you know, in my review, I went and found, basically – got to love the Wayback Machine, right? The Internet Archive. Using the Internet Archive, I was able to find the contract that they were quoting. And what the contract says is that for the backup service, that it says that the storage resources for the backup service will be physically isolated from the servers that it's backing up. And then it's like somebody stopped reading, right?
Yeah.
Because the very next sentence it says, the storage resources will be located in the same data center as the resources that it's backing up.
Yeah.
It's literally right in the contract. And so as like a legal person, like I just want to say, well, how did you not read that? Right. I'm on the side of the customer here in that they paid for a backup service, but I'm not on the side of the customer in that they should have reviewed that contract and they should have said, so wait, what?
Yeah.
They should have said.
Well, and unlike a lot of other contracts, right, or like SaaS services where they talk nothing about backups, this was clearly stated what they are doing.
Clearly stated. They're paying extra, right? They were paying something like 2 cents a gigabyte per month for this backup service. And the thing is, I think what the judge said this is one of those things where, you know, I'm really good at arguing and I can argue both sides of this. Like on one side, they should have read the contract. The customer should have read the contract and they should have asked about what that sentence mean. And they should have then just not paid for the backup service because it wouldn't be worth it. On the other hand, I agree with the judge. Like, who does that?
Yeah.
Right? It's not like, what's the point of doing a backup if it's just to disk drives right next door, right? And the judge was basically saying, this isn't in keeping with, you know, the state of the art of the backup system. Agreed, agreed, agreed. And it wouldn't allow you to meet the requirements of the contract.
Yeah.
And so while I think basically what the judge says, you know, even though the contract may have stated that, what are you, stupid, right? You
know what I mean? Which is different than the second case. So there are two customers who ended up suing and winning, right? So the second customer also sued OVH, and this time the judge also found in the favor of the customer. And this one was slightly different because in their contract, they had actually written out that they had a production system in one data center and explicitly their backup system in a different data center. So in the contract, it was worded that their production and backup systems should be separate, and OVH agreed to it. And what ended up happening is OVH ended up keeping both copies of data in the same data center. But
so basically, they just lied.
But here's the problem, is their management console kept telling the customer that they were in separate data centers.
Wow. Yeah, that's just bad. And that's probably the worst thing that I've read about this story. Because if you're a customer, that's about the best you could do is say, hey, listen, we're demanding that you put it separately. And then you check the console and the console says it's separate. It's the cloud. Like, I can't go visit it, right?
Yeah.
In that case, the customer did everything that they could.
Yeah, and so the judge fined OVH €138,000, something like that. But that's not even the worst part of OVH's behavior. So OVH eventually found the backup server. And so they were like, hey, yeah, customer, great news. We found your backup server so you can restore your data. And while they're giving the customer back the backup server, they accidentally deleted the data on the disks.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
yeah.
Like, I just want to know your OVH, you claim to be the third or the largest EU headquartered cloud provider, but simple processes like this, you're not able to. I get some of it's probably maybe they don't have the experience or expertise or they never had to go through this process. Hopefully now on they have better processes in place. It's like a learning experience, but I feel for the customers.
Yeah, I feel for those customers, and I wish the best for the ones in the 140 class action lawsuit. It doesn't sound good if the two people who specifically had it in their contract only got $150,000. By the way, I would state, well, good for them. Yeah. Like it's sort of like I'm sure what they'd rather have is the data back.
Yeah.
It's sort of like it's like a wrongful death lawsuit. A wrongful death lawsuit can't bring your
person back,
the deceased person back. It's just in some way trying to compensate you, and €150,000 is not going to compensate anybody for anything. I mean, I wouldn't mind, just for the record, if anybody wants to send me €150,000, I'm good. Like, you know, I'll take that. But for a large company that lost, you know, their entire company and this is all they're getting. Yeah. One interesting thing that the judge, a point that the judge made was that there was no reason, there was no incentive or whatever for OVH to configure backups in the way that they configured them, meaning that they're not a brand new hosting company that only has one data center.
Yeah.
He's saying you have data centers all over the place and you have clearly bandwidth between these data centers. And so there was no reason to configure backups the way that you configured them. You could have just as easily made sure that the backup server is always in another data center, but you just couldn't be bothered doing that. So that's just the way the judge saw things. and ruled in the, you know, in the favor of the plaintiff. So when we look on this, you know, it's difficult to talk about lessons learned.
Is it though?
Because at least, well, because like even the customer that did what we would have said to do, right? So, you know, number one, review your contract. And so the customer reviewed that contract and said, hey, what do you mean you're keeping it in the same data center? That's nonsense. You need to put it in another data center. And then OVH said, sure. Yeah.
But,
right? So, and then they put it...
So here's, I think, how they could have done it, which is by doing DR testing or restore testing.
Okay. All right.
Right.
So... So trust but verify, yeah. The old phrase from Mr. Reagan there.
Shoot your production in the head and try to restore your data.
Boy, not like the Alaska. Not like that episode.
Yes.
Okay. So simulate shooting your server in the head and then trying to restore.
Yeah.
How do they simulate shutting down the data center?
Or you just prevent any access at a new data center to any IP addresses in the old data center.
Mm-hmm. Like, how do you...
And then try to do the restore.
You really need to verify that. It's just that there is a certain degree of trust that you are placing in the vendor that they're going to do the things that they say they're doing.
Yeah.
You need to figure out a way to verify that. But I would say that the easier answer... here is that is to use a third-party backup service.
Yeah.
And because while you could contractually, you could get like you can use Amazon backup, right? And you can snapshot your way to happiness, and then you can replicate those snapshots to another region if you want.
Yeah.
And you could probably figure out some way to verify that those snapshots are in another region. But if you use a third party backup service, it's like you're guaranteeing that the backups will be somewhere else other than what you're backing up. Because to me, that's like the fundamental, you're shaking your head. I know what you're thinking. You can argue it in a minute. I'm just saying that to me, like the fundamental thing of backup is to make sure the backup is somewhere else. So you're thinking that if a customer is running in the same region,
I was thinking that if I'm a customer and I'm going to a vendor to offload my need to have infrastructure and to manage all these resources, am I as a customer going to go pay and find a backup service? And manage a backup service to go deal with this, right? I think that that bar gets pretty high depending on how complex it is. And because you also need to find a backup service that works with the cloud provider you're using, right? Which may be harder for the non-top three clouds that you have, right? Non-Amazon, Azure, or Google.
Yeah, so I thought you were arguing something different.
No.
I guess I would argue that that's the job.
I agree. Right? It is a job when you move to OVH.
If you're developing infrastructure, if you're developing infrastructure, backup is part of the infrastructure. If you don't know how to do cloud vendor A without also backing up cloud vendor A,
then you
shouldn't use cloud vendor A.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, okay. So what are you saying?
No, I agree, but people don't really think about backup, right?
Well, that's their problem.
Yes.
That's why we exist.
Yes.
Right? I'm just playing devil's advocate.
You got 1,000 things on your mind.
Well, you're doing a good job.
You have 1,000 things on your mind, and like, right, backup is not going to be your top priority.
So that's a problem as old as time.
Yeah.
No one thinks about backup until, you know.
But I think there is a solution, though, for this.
Okay.
Right.
Talk to me.
And I think the solution is, as an industry, we should hold vendors accountable for providing the bare minimum needed, at least a bare minimum needed for what is safe backups. right? If you are saying I'm doing backups, here's the bare minimum, right? Follow the 3-2-1 rule. Keep it out separate in a, right? That ensures that your backups are isolated, right? These sort of things. I think there should be a bare minimum that we should hold vendors accountable to. And until we get to that point, I think customers should ask their vendors, hey, here are 5 questions. When I'm going to go use your service and I put it out and ask you questions, answer these 5 questions related to backup.
I think that's a perfectly valid thing to do. I just know that with most of the SaaS services, the answer is no, right?
Which is okay, but at least you have the answers.
Yeah.
Right? And then now you can start to think about, yeah. And now you could be like, hey, maybe if I want to go use, say, ServiceNow, I should figure out, okay, how am I going to back up that data if it's important to me? Because they don't offer anything.
Agreed. And maybe I'll live in a utopia where one day there's 2 products that are really impressive and one of them has backup and the other one doesn't as part of the service. And the one with backup wins the day.
Yeah. And then the other one eventually figures out they're losing deals because they don't have it. And then they start offering it. Right.
That is, it's what we call the free market.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. And I just think that this is a really bad story because it's just because some people who thought they were doing the right thing weren't actually doing the right thing because the vendor wasn't doing the right thing and they were actually misrepresenting.
Yeah.
That's the worst part of the story is that they were actually misrepresenting what they were doing. And
it's like, hey, I bought a car. It's supposed to get 100 miles per gallon, but it only gets 10. You know?
It's more like, it's more like it doesn't go at all.
No. I was going to say, or I have a car. I bought it. It has airbags. I get into a wreck. The airbags don't deploy because there are no airbags.
Well, it turns out there's no airbags.
Yeah, there are no airbags.
There's just no airbags at all. And they're like, well, the airbags are only in the cars that are in the factory,
you know,
the demos.
So
we didn't put them in the.
Speaking of this, so I was actually reading a Reddit article the other day, or a Reddit post, and someone was complaining, and the story goes that they were sleeping, they were renting a place, they were sleeping, and they heard a beeping, and they go look, and it was like one of those carbon monoxide detectors that they had bought at a previous rental and brought it, but they never installed it. They're like, huh, that's weird. So they open all the windows, and then it keeps going off and off. And then they call the fire department and apparently their fireplace was leaking carbon monoxide. So they're like, that's at least
in their rental.
In their rental. So they're like, good, at least it was caught. And then the fire department goes around. Apparently all their smoke detectors were just shells. There was no actual smoke detector inside of them.
So yeah. Well, at least that one is, again, that's fixable, you know, that you can go around and test the smoke detectors in an Airbnb you're saying or staying. But that's just wrong.
Yeah.
So the person had a battery powered
carbon monoxide detector.
Carbon monoxide detector in their like luggage or something?
No. So this was a rental, right? So they were renting like long term, like a year rental. Right. And they had just moved into the place and from their old place, they had brought whatever they had. And it just happened to be just sitting in like a closet somewhere.
Wow. Saved their life.
Yep. Saved their life.
Yeah.
Go replace yours. Check your smoke detectors, folks.
Your smoke detectors and your carbon monoxide detectors.
Yeah.
Which, for the record, need to be 2 separate devices. For a while, I was like, this is annoying that, I mean, this is totally off the subject, but for a while, I was saying that CO2 detectors and fire detectors or smoke detectors should be combined. And there are companies that sell combined smoke and fire and CO detectors. Do you know why they should absolutely not be in the same place?
Because
the same unit?
Because they rise differently.
Yeah. Smoke goes up, CO goes down.
Yeah.
So CO detectors should be about a foot off the floor.
Yeah.
And smoke detectors should be up on the ceiling. And they should never therefore never be the same device.
Yeah.
How it's actually legal to sell them in one thing, I don't know. Anyway. So maybe I just scared the crap out of somebody and they're gonna go now buy separate CO2 detectors.
You get those plug-in ones, which is perfect because the outlets are at the right height.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Any final thoughts on the OVH fire?
No, I think, yeah, like you said, it's people were trying to do the right thing, or they assumed that the right thing was being done and they got burned. And yeah, I don't know what else we could recommend for them to do.
Yeah. But verify as much as you can that your backup infrastructure is separate. And again, I think the easiest way to do that is to use a different vendor. Yeah. But you know, maybe it's because I used to work for one of those companies that there was a different vendor, but I don't anymore. I still think that way. Anyway. Well, thanks for the chat, Persona.
Anytime. Thank you, Curtis.
And thank you to our listeners. You know, you're why we do this. That is a wrap.
The Backup Wrap-Up is written, recorded, and produced by me, W. Curtis Preston. If you need backup or DR consulting, content generation, or expert witness work, check out backupcentral.com. You can also find links from my O'Reilly books on the same website. Remember, this is an independent podcast, and any opinions that you hear are those of the speaker and not necessarily an employer. Thanks for listening.